Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And you may or may not have chosen to listen to this program at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, considering it's 1 hour from kickoff of some thing that's happening somewhere else in the Big Easy. I've never heard of the Big Easy before as far as referencing life in general. It's always the big hard. It's just like, oh my gosh, just struggling through. Well, today is going to be a little different because we're going to bring you Tell Me Your Story 3 p.m. on Sunday. And then it'll be rebroadcast. Well, it won't be rebroadcast. It'll be archived at richarddugan.com. We are also on A2Zen.fm simultaneously, which is rather interesting, at 3 p.m. Pacific time. If you'd like to get this program again, archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and I'd love to hear from you. richard@richarddugan.com is my email address. Be very interested in hearing what you have to say, not only about today's program, which ties in with what's coming up in a couple of weeks. Valentine's Day falls on a Thursday. It's always better when it falls on a weekend because you get to plan things out a little bit more. You don't have to deal with work and you're exhausted, and now it's like, oh, now dinner and or a movie and or whatever. But we're going to talk a little bit about how you can put the fun back into it and actually maybe have a little bit of a sense of humor more so than a sense of dread. I know that a lot of people have a lot of different feelings about Valentine's Day, and we're going to find out about those feelings of our guests in studio who have actually written a book. It is not a new book, but it is now available online. It's available as an ebook, and basically we encourage you to check it out. It is a book that is entitled, and I'm going to grab the title right here. It is called The Very Generic and Experimental
Experiential
dyslexia. Zodiac-based guide to Valentine's Day bliss, and it is written by and illustrated Beth McDonald and Jamie O'Toole. And Jamie has done the artwork in this book, beautiful artwork. And I want to welcome both of you to the program today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you, Richard.
It's great to have you in studio, Beth. Normally, we're talking on the phone about all things Zodiac, and depending upon what particular sign that we happen to be in that particular week. And this week we're going to skip that segment because we're going to be talking about not just about love and and of course the book about Valentine's Day bliss. Matter of fact, that's a good question. Well, you have an S on the end of Valentine's, but I seem to recall seeing it written without an S at the end.
Oh, honey, that's not my area of expertise. That is an awesome question, and I'm sure there's somebody out there who knows the answer to it.
But we won't go there at this particular point in time. It's fine. One of the things that I wanted to touch upon is, now, the original release of the book was when?
That was in 2008.
Okay, so we're talking 5 years ago.
Yes.
And that was in print.
Yes.
And it's more of a soft cover, if you will, a slick soft cover.
A little booklet. It's just a teeny little helpful, handy little guide to staying out of the doghouse on
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. And I know that the doghouse is usually resided by guys. Very rarely do you hear about gals who
in the doghouse on Valentine's
who
Day.
Who get into trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that there is, with various holidays, including Valentine's Day, guys get into it's like they think they've done the right thing and they're not sure. And I have to say, the best way for me to summarize this for myself as a guy is, it's like being back in school and taking a test.
It totally is.
And it's like, is this book going to help us to not have to take that test over and over again?
That was the intention.
It drives me nuts.
I know it does, honey. I know. She's choking over here. This is hysterical. I wish this was being videotaped.
Apparently, Jamie can relate to more so to what I can say. We're about to lose her. Don't drink any water.
Please, honey, don't drink. Oh, my gosh. This is precisely why Jamie and I did this.
Okay.
You know, as astrologers, our work with people is very, very seasonal.
Okay.
And I can't tell you how many years I would go to Jamie and say, is it just me or is pretty much the entire month of February damage control for Valentine's Day in our client, in your client work? It's like, what's up with that? And after many years of talking and laughing about it, we concluded the exact same thing, that for most people, Valentine's Day is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
For women, they really do have this going to Vegas, winning the lottery, cashing out expectation.
Okay.
For women, and a lot of it's unconscious, it seems to be a lot of women believe that Valentine's Day is the one day of the year where their man can, if they're in a heterosexual relationship, gay and lesbians have different issues, but for a lot of women in heterosexual relationships, it seems to be they have this expectation that it's the time when the man should make up for all the romantic errors of the past 12 months. It is your time to redeem yourself. It is your time to, like, really let your feelings out, and they really expect a lot. Men, on the other hand, sense this and just cave.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's too much to bear. And so we were trying to find a fun and funny way to take some pressure off, bring everybody's expectations down, and have more fun with it based on the different characteristics and attributes of the zodiac, the signs of the zodiac, because that depersonalizes it. One of the things I love about astrology is that it makes it more generic so that it's less personal. So facing the different aspects of your shadow side are a little easier to do.
Yeah. And Jamie, you're an astrologer as well?
I am, yeah.
And you've been practicing astrology for how long?
Since I was 21.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and stay
a
with
long
that.
Time
yeah,
ago.
I was going to say, don't go there.
No. I know better than that.
It was a very different world when I started this.
I can imagine. And obviously, a lot of guys, they just think that this was something designed, a gimmick designed by Hallmark to sell cards and get guys in trouble. I mean, you know, that was the bottom line. But obviously, there is an historic element to Valentine's Day. And I know that it was, I don't know if it was a bishop or a priest, and his last name was Valentine, or there was some connection with giving this, I can't even remember the whole story. But it has nothing to do with that anymore, because now it seems as though, again, it's as you say, it's gals are expecting and guys are
freaking out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that can be, I mean, that just takes all the fun out of it. I mean, if you're going to celebrate, and I know some people who just refuse, they're saying, you know what, we're not going there.
Right.
This is just a regular day.
Right.
Okay, you can let everybody else, because I am showing you how I feel 364 other days out of the year, including today. But, you know, there's Christmas, and there's your birthday, and there's our anniversary, and the list can go on. And then all of a sudden, there's this one day, and it's like, wait a minute, why is it that on those other days, I seem to do okay, but on this day,
right?
It's like, this isn't an A, B, C, D, E. This is pass fail.
Yeah, women go there.
Yeah.
Women go there. And so this was designed to help women not.
So how does that happen? I mean, okay, the concept of the book you've described. So in the contents of the book, how do you present this in that context? I mean, let's say we were to go to one sign.
Awesome.
Of the zodiac.
Awesome idea. Okay. Each sign views love and romance very, very differently, just as the genders tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most romantic signs in the zodiac is that of Taurus. And here, let me read you a little bit about Taurus from the book.
Okay.
Taurus rules romance, beauty, harmony, and the divine feminine archetype. If your lover is a Taurus or has a lot of Taurus in their natal charts, Valentine's Day for you is the retailer's equivalent of Christmas. Everything you do for the whole rest of the year depends on what happens right here, right now. Oh, and how well you perform under intense pressure. Sorry, bucko, this is just not negotiable. You will really need to get this right, or there will be a doghouse out back with your name on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Taurus. Taurus is just, especially women who are Taurians, they love beauty and they love kind of luxurious kind of things.
Yeah.
And experiences. And especially if you're like most of us who live in Santa Barbara, you know, the price we pay for living here makes luxury a little hard to come by sometimes, they're going to really expect it on Valentine's Day. They want the dinner out. They don't care about the crowds or the surlier than normal service that you get.
And I've gotten to the point in to where I have actually offered two different scenarios that have both been rejected. But see, I'm not going to go into this thing trying to surprise anybody, because a surprise is a killer. Because if it's the wrong surprise,
you're going to be in trouble.
You're in trouble. And so I'm sitting here going, okay, so what is it that you would enjoy doing? Now, granted, it is a Thursday, so it can carry over into Friday or Saturday, and that's fine.
Especially on this scenario, because it's a big holiday weekend.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot more freedom and flexibility this year, I think, to get creative with it.
Yeah.
I have a question. What sign is your wife?
Well, let's see. February 2nd would make her Aquarius.
Yeah.
Which, by the way,
I was thinking you might read from Aquarius.
Yeah. Oh,
before you do that, which, by the way, we spoke in our segment, I think it was last week or the week before, about how most people make the false assumption that Aquarius is the water sign when it is not. It is actually the water bearer, which is an air sign.
Air sign.
Interesting. So anyway, go ahead.
Okay. In stark glaring contrast to Capricorn, Aquarians are the most eccentric and unusual lovers. With one, you'll exist in a near-permanent state of post-traumatic stress syndrome because you will never know what's coming next. But by the same token, you will never, ever, ever be bored. That you can count on them to be predictably unpredictable. The only tricky part is finding that fine line between the wildly exciting and the utterly and demoralizingly chaotic.
Yeah. Well, and again, this is all tongue-in-cheek to some degree.
This is all tongue-in-cheek.
But I'm sure, fairly accurate.
Yeah.
But it's written in the context to where you can laugh a little bit at yourself and your mate, partner, and so forth.
Right.
I mean, for example, I'm Cancer, and of course, most of the time, I just think, Cancer the crab, and he's always irritable and so forth, which I don't consider myself to be. That's a whole different thing.
Well, and there's more to it than that. Yeah. Cancer is very, very sensitive. And it rules the home and hearth. And, most people who have a lot of the sign of Cancer, they show their love by making home wonderful. Mm-hmm. They nest like nobody's business.
Right.
And so creating a warm and loving home environment, like you said, that's a 365 day of the year job.
Yeah.
I show that every day.
Yeah.
And Cancer doesn't need all the special frou-frou stuffs,
And I have to wonder, too, I'm just speculating here, and you can certainly elaborate, either of you, on this, is that these kinds of days of the year, these holidays, are not part of our history, in that this is more modern day civilization. This isn't going back 6,000 and 7,000 and 2,000 and 4,000 years. This is a construct of ceremony and ritual are part of our history.
Right.
But this kind of day is not
In that sense, through one lens, yes, but I think through another lens, no. And Jamie and I talk about this all the time. We have kind of made this our ceremony and ritual.
Okay.
And so I think part of the frustration between the genders is the gals are saying, hey, as crazy and weird as this sounds, this is the ritual now.
Yeah.
Come on, get on board. And so I think a more expansive viewpoint is always to make it less material and more about the sacred.
Yeah.
This is how I work. Part of the institutions of love and marriage are that sacred love, that sacred sexuality, that sacred, when I am with you, it's on and it's good. We're both closer to God.
Right.
And so how do we put the sacred in it and make it less about the material stuff, the spending of the money, it's the one night of the year that we make up. It's like going to church on Sunday and not having your religion during the rest of the week. Let's not make Valentine's Day like that.
Right.
Let's make it sacred. And then let's also turn an eye towards how do we keep that going during the year.
What can I do for you rather than what can I buy for you?
Well, or what can we do together?
Right, right.
Yeah, because we always struggle in our relationships between, you know, loving in a healthy way and doing for in ways that are healthy and not, you know, frighteningly codependent, you know. It's tough. Yeah. It's just tough. Yeah. We all struggle with that.
I mean, I even look back on the last 10 years, well, 15 years, actually, since we've been together, when the first few Valentine's Day that rolled around, I did, because I had the time, I had the freedom to do so, I was able to do some pretty neat things. I remember buying like 12 or 14 Mylar red heart-shaped balloons, going out to her workplace, and we drove separate cars, and I put several balloons with their strings. I put the strings into the door frame and closed the door, so they were floating up above the car.
Yeah,
you know. And so when she came out from work, and of course I didn't think it through real well, because I thought, okay, so now that the Mylar, now she's come out, now what is she going to do? She opens the door, the balloons will, unless she grabs the string, the balloons will float away. So it's like there was a plan that wasn't thought through completely, but the basic concept was
there.
One. Yeah.
Was there. And again, given how, you know, Aquarians love the quirky and the eccentric and the slightly, you know, off the beaten path.
Sure.
That probably went over better with her than it would have with anybody else.
But the problem with it is now, come next year, the next year, now what are you going to do that's bigger and or better than that? And each year you have to outdo yourself, and it becomes, that's where this whole business of the guys cringing.
Totally. Totally. And like, what we tell people, especially if, again, depending on the signs, you know, get clear ahead of time. You know, how do we want to do Valentine's Day this year? And it does help to mix it up a little bit.
And it doesn't do any good. And I think that not so much just from experience, but I think just in general as a thought, that is always the best course because – again, you know, I came up with two possible things to do, and she's no. You don't want to do something that just one of you enjoys. I mean, it's
exactly it's a compromise.
It's wonderful to let's say one of you likes to mountain climb and the other likes to go out sailing, and the other one doesn't like the others. It's wonderful if you go along with the other person in that regard on occasion, but if you're trying to celebrate a special moment, you're playing the martyr, so to speak, because that's the only way I can think of that as looking. That's not good. You don't want the other person being the martyr.
Yeah, well, and the thing I think that happens a lot,
or sacrificing.
Yeah, in Valentine's Day is that it really brings whatever unresolved issues you have to the surface.
Yeah.
And it's not the best time to try and work all that out.
No.
And that's, again, where we really, you know, what we see a lot is people do have a hard time in any situation, but especially as couples, negotiating compromises.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go on a short hike with you if you come on a short sail with me,
right,
and maybe we won't climb the rocks this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That kind of thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, why don't you read part of the Aquarius information? Because part of this is an information guide.
Well, and we have different categories of suggestions for that are funny, and they're meant to be funny, and just to kind of lighten things up a little bit. And we have different categories for each sign, you know, because different couples celebrate Valentine's Day differently. You know, some people like to go on excursions and adventures. Some people like to have a fancy meal. Some people like to give gifts. Music, books, DVDs, jewelry and trinkets, or clothing, or something like that. And of course, there's always sex. You know, Valentine's Day sex is critical if that's what couples do. And some signs of the zodiac are much more sexual than others and whatnot. So we have some little contrasts. For example, excursions and adventures for the sign of Cancer, because they are so homey. You know, you guys are so happy just to take a trip to, like, Home Depot or sweeping through linens and things or the Pottery Barn. You know, again, nesting. Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to make your little nest.
Right.
or sailing, getting onto the sea, you know, because that's what you guys do. Aquarius is a little different. And what we came up with for Aquarius was this: put them in the car and take them somewhere, but don't tell them where you're going. Blindfold them if necessary. Say, come on, honey, we're going. Aquarians like surprises, really. Trust me, it'll be just fine. It'll be just fine.
I like what you have at the bottom of some of these pages. I don't know if it's on all of them. I haven't had a chance to look at every single one. You have a mantra to help you get on the right page.
Right, with your lover. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I like this one. Basically, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Yeah. I like that. That's very good. That's very good.
Yeah, that's the mantra for Aquarius, because they do rule outer space, the future, Star Trek.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
The way that science fiction becomes our reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that to have a guide like this to help you through this particular period of time is very valuable. An anniversary, you have an anchor.
Right.
It was when you cemented your relationship, if you will,
yeah,
where you connected together.
You made the promise.
You made the promise. You know, birthdays, obviously, was when you came into this world. And then, of course, even anniversaries of when you first met, your first date, those kinds of things are okay, too. Because, again, you have that anchor. But Valentine's Day does not seem to have the same kind of anchor. And maybe that's where I think the confusion and frustration comes in for both sexes. And I think that that's really where we are kind of coming from on this program today, is to try to demystify some of that. We're also going to talk a little bit about where we are. Obviously, we are in Aquarius. And so maybe we will take a moment. We won't do a separate segment. We'll take a moment in our next segment to talk a little bit about Aquarius in the general sense, as far as what people can expect. I know that we just had a full moon.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, I remember driving. I think I had a ball game that night, and I had to come down to the station. And I was coming down State Street. And the moon was not very high in the sky. It was one of those moons that is just, it's huge. It's like, oh my God, it's moved closer. And that's
it's
only
just
the atmosphere.
Right there.
Yeah, the atmosphere is just magnifying it. It's just incredible. So, what we'll do is we'll take a short break and we will come back. I'm talking with Beth McDonald as well as Jamie O'Toole. They are the creators of the book that is available to you through your website, which is BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. And it is the very generic and experiential Zodiac-based guide to Valentine's Day bliss. And we are going to come back and talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are coming to you with half an hour left until kickoff. I think it was 4 p.m. Pacific time was when this game that they're playing somewhere down in the Gulf of Mexico, off the Gulf of Mexico, I should say, is going to be played. And not a big interesting event for me. Used to be, only because I kind of liked watching it. My first wife and her family, they were big into football, and every Sunday after church, you sat in front of the
now,
TV.
Now, watch yourself, Richard. This is one of our biggest national holidays.
It's
right up there with Black Friday, man.
Black
this
Friday.
Is like a whole new this is a whole new deal. It's a whole new world. You
well,
know?
You know, and send your cards and letters, not to me.
I have to, again, thank anybody who's listening to us today on this sacred American holiday.
Exactly.
You know, this is I really, really, really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And whether you're listening as we're broadcasting live on Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific time or A2Zen.fm, or if you are listening to the archive, great. You know, I mean, that's what it's there for as well.
Welcome.
Welcome. I want to remind our listeners, you can get the book that Beth and Jamie have put together. You still have it in hardcover. I don't want to say hardcover, but it's still in the booklet form.
Right.
But now it's available as an
e-book.
We call it an e-book.
Yep.
Regardless of whether it's PDF or Kindle or whatever the format is.
Right.
It's just an e-book.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's available both at your website, BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Yes.
As well as it's available on Amazon.
Yes.
Jamie, do you have a website?
No.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Why not? No, you don't have to answer. That's okay. No, no. It's not everybody has one, and not everybody has to have one any more than not everybody has to be on Facebook or Twitter. Raise your hands if you're not. Thank you very much.
She's not on Facebook either.
Neither am I. I have a Facebook page that is deactivated.
That's funny.
I don't have time. I don't need to know that. Oh, you're in the grocery store shopping for cassava melons. I don't care.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Or you wore your pink tennis shoes to the gym today.
Or I'm in the cereal aisle picking out Captain Crunch. I don't.
Yeah, right. We get a little inane.
I've said this before, and I will say it again. If my life were turned into a reality show, I wouldn't watch.
Oh, no.
Wouldn't watch.
No, and I wouldn't want anybody else to either.
Well, I wouldn't care from that standpoint, but it's like, I'm sorry, but, you know, my life is exciting. I have a great time with it and in it. But as a reality show, I wouldn't be watching it.
Nope.
So we are talking about love, and we're talking about relationships. We're talking about, of course, Valentine's Day, and your book /booklet that again is available at your website or at Amazon, and is now available as an ebook. But the other aspect of all of this is the fact that when you are in relationship with someone, when you have those moments, when you have those, whether it's not necessarily and specifically the anniversaries, okay, the moment where you popped the question or the moment where you made the commitment, made the promise, etc. But even throughout the year, the other 364 days of the year, or whatever that totals up to, creating those moments in time other than the holidays is also very important.
It is. It's absolutely crucial. And again, it's very, very unique to each individual couple.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's different. Give yourself permission to create those moments in ways that work for you. And astrologically, that, you know, the sun sign is significant for that, but the moon placement, your moon sign, your wife's moon placement, often tells us as much or more about how each person experiences love,
mm-hmm.
and where those moments are likely to be able to be created. And if you wanted to be really super esoteric about it, it's the composite moon. The composite is the chart of the relationship, and the moon placement in that composite chart will show you exactly where you'll best create those spaces.
Why don't you tell them what the composite is about?
Ooh, pray tell. Brilliant, brilliant. The composite, there are several ways to compare lovers' charts.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do bi-wheels where you're kind of matching them up, or you can make, which is always recommended and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most crucial things, I think, Jamie and I think, to do is to make what they call a composite chart. And that's where you crunch the numbers of the two charts and you create a completely separate and different third chart that is based on the midpoints. Let's say her sun is Aquarius, your sun is Capricorn. Your composite, I should have brought this because I've got it file. Yeah, the composite will be in between halfway in between.
Basically emerging.
A third party, actually, because when two people come together, you create a third situation, don't you?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Tai Chi, the part of Tai Chi that's out of one comes two and out of two comes three.
Right.
The third. Yeah.
Well, they talk about this also in therapy. With your therapist, you're creating a safe space in which both of you can be and talk about the problems. With a relationship, you're creating a safe space where both of you can express love and the needs that you have.
Right.
That love hopefully is going to provide an answer for or give you some security.
Awesome. Yes, exactly. Hmm. And that composite chart is an awesome map to help couples do that.
Most of the time we are off by ourselves. You know, I'm here with you two ladies and our photographer. She is where she is. We're separate, okay? But when we come together, it creates that third.
The third.
Entity,
the holy
if
third.
You will.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that dynamic is totally different.
It
and
is.
And then people, then when they see us, it's so different in one sense. But the reality is, and it's not that much different, because they will still see that part of the composite in the individual, the single.
Right.
Okay. But when you come together, it somehow it sort of magnifies it exponentially, in a manner of speaking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's really important just to be mindful of the different things relationships bring. It changes how you are and who you are in the world, and it changes how people see you as an individual. It changes how you operate together in the world, and how you see yourselves and how other people see you.
Let me ask you about the Western astrological chart. Does it change each time you create a chart for someone, depending upon the day that you create it? Is that impactful? Or is it pretty much, and I don't want to say set in stone, but are the characteristics all pretty much where they are, and this is who you are and how you are and so forth?
Yeah, yeah. That is an awesome question. And to answer it, yes, your natal chart is a map of where all the planets and constellations were at the moment you were born and drew your first breath.
Okay.
And it's said to be a map of your covenant with God. It's a map of what you were thinking when y'all decided it was time for you to show up here or come back here, whatever you believe.
Right.
And that doesn't change.
Okay.
However, there are some other charts that we use, especially when we're really digging down into nitty-gritty crisis management, future planning, strategic planning sorts of situations that are imperative to look at. And one of them does change, and that is the progress chart. It's based on your birth chart, and then we animate it ahead. And you're going to remember this better than I do, Jamie. I think it's one year for every day.
Okay.
So if, like, I'm 51 years old and I was born on June 15th, my progress chart would be based on some point in about the beginning of August of that year.
Your son would have moved from Gemini into Virgo.
Right, right. And so your sun sign
cancer.
The rising moves, the some of the faster planets will move, the slower ones will not. But it's said to be and I believe this, it's a very awesome snapshot of where you are right now, where the grace is in your life, where the ease is, where you're the most grateful, and then where you're having to spend a lot more of your time and energy solving problems.
Let me ask you this, because what mental picture I'm getting is the concept of magnetism in the context of... We'll take a look at the planets.
Yeah.
Okay. Each one of the planets in our solar system, in our 9 or 10 planets, however they've chosen, whatever number they've given them this week, has its own magnetic pull, which allows it to stay in the orbit that it's in around the sun. Well, each individual, in the context of an astrological chart, has his or her own magnetism. So when you have a composite or merged chart with partners, you get a new magnetism.
Right.
They impact and affect one another. So now when you do a chart for an individual who is interacting with all these other people in their lives, be it at work or at home or at play or whatever the case may be, they're being impacted and they're being drawn this way or repelled away by these different people.
Or asked to choose.
How does that aspect play into a chart? Is that something that even can be factored or discussed in any way?
Well, if you're asking a Gemini and a Sag, of course, we always have opinions, you know. But other people might not agree with us. But
well, I was thinking one of the things that I've always believed about the matrix that you come back through is that your birth chart is like your spiritual DNA. It's a map of what's going to happen to you in this life.
Okay.
And so your DNA doesn't change just because you fall in love with somebody else.
Right.
Or because you have an abusive mother, or your DNA is your DNA. Your spiritual center is your spiritual center. You can fall back into that place for sustenance and
inspiration,
so that you can often see how people are using their charts without even knowing they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many times you can just look at someone's chart and say, honey, you're living your chart. Good job. Obviously, you have a reason for having this chart, and you're living up to that reason. So that even though you're being impacted by all these other influences, you're still who you are. You still have your center.
Okay.
And that's a very important thing to realize for everybody, especially in a society like ours where you get so much information, so many people all the time, that you can lose yourself, like on Facebook.
Yeah.
I think Facebook is a really good example of where you get fragmented.
Yeah.
Not that I think Facebook is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way it's used.
Yeah. I'm even, and just to dovetail off of that, a friend of mine shared with me an experience he had in a restaurant with his partner, where somebody walked up to him and said, "Hi, we're friends on Facebook." He did not know this person from Adam, and that's creepy. That's really creepy because that's the, I'm sorry, but that to me is borderline stalker.
Well, and you choose who your friends are on Facebook.
Yeah.
You don't have to respond to every request you get, especially if you don't know the person.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Even on some of these other social sites like LinkedIn.
Yeah, that one gets weird.
I get messages from people saying, this person has endorsed you under these categories. And I'm going, how? How could they endorse me under these categories? I don't know them.
Right. Right.
You know? Getting off on a tangent, but nonetheless, still, you know, you're dealing with relationships at all different levels.
Right.
And how meaningful they are is dependent upon
many things.
Well, it is. It really is. And quite honestly, a Facebook relationship is about as far as you can get, or as I should say, as close as you can get to not knowing that person. I mean, it's like right on the line, in my opinion, unless you actually do. I mean, if I friended my sister or my brother or my parents, that's different because I already know them. But Sam Barcelona, I don't know him, and I'm friending him.
Yeah.
You know,
this
what does
is,
that really
again,
mean?
Again, outside my purview.
Sure.
But one of the things I have to say is to reiterate what Jamie said about getting back to your center.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for people like you and I, Richard, who have a lot of Gemini.
Yeah.
Gemini to get blown off course in things like Facebook.
Yeah.
Because Facebook is such a Gemini thing.
Yeah.
It's all about networking and communicating. And it is usually applied in a very, very shallow kind of narcissistic way.
Yeah.
And that's our fall.
Yeah.
That's our life lesson for people like you and I. We came back to have more depth and to learn how to be discerning. Gemini is what they call a mutable sign. It's so very blown about by the winds and pressures of others. And people like you and I are really prone to be seeing somebody friending us on Facebook and not really know them, but go with the flow. It's what everybody else
does. Yeah.
And it's not recommended.
Yeah. Which was
even
what?
Facebook will tell you.
Yeah.
And they'll say, do you know this person?
Yeah.
If no, would you like to report them? Yes. You know? It's like you have to. Facebook is an awesome exercise in that it requires you to drop down, fall back on who you are, and trust your gut, and not disassociate and disconnect.
Yeah. Do you know that? I've shared this with other folks as well. There is a form of discrimination that is perfectly legal and perfectly appropriate, and we do it every day. And that is that you can discriminate with whom you associate. Now, what your factors are your business. But
everybody's
the point is,
parameters
I can choose to associate with you or not.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a drag on me and my energy, or my magnetism, so to speak, I don't really want to be around you.
Right.
That's the kind of discernment you're talking about in terms of association or disassociation.
Right. And yeah. That can come into play and will always come into play in love.
Yeah.
We will have moments. That's part of what the promise of marriage is. Yeah. I promise to stand by you while we each work out our personal issues.
Exactly.
With each other.
Yeah.
And with other people.
I think that I will call them our vows.
Our vows.
That we spoke at our wedding, my wife and I think were more accurate and appropriate than the traditional till death do you part.
Yeah.
And the ones we spoke basically said, I think it was along the lines of, will I make you happy, sad, mad, angry, etc.? The answer might be yes, but the intent, but then you say,
the intent,
but
is,
my intention
is,
and you go from there.
Right.
It's like, okay, we know that we're going to have these emotions throughout the relationship.
Right.
But my intention is not to make you mad or sad
ever.
Or angry, you know, and those kinds of things. But I acknowledge
right.
those times may
and,
come.
And that is actually a brilliant and timely little piece that you've thrown in here. And I just want to reiterate that.
Go.
One of the things that is so important, if you actually are married, if you have said the vows and made the promise, we get in our daily life, and I see this so much in my work with couples, we get so far away from our vows, especially if you wrote your vows.
Yeah.
I think everybody should have a printed copy of them on the refrigerator, because that's what it comes down to. That's the thing we have to revisit on a daily basis for the marriage to work. And Valentine's Day, if you can't look at it every day, at a minimum, renew and review what you promised each other.
Yeah.
And use this as an opportunity to tune things up. You're not going to get a better one. At least once a year, take a peek.
And I think, too, another thing to consider, and again, this is you do this as a couple, you know,
as
an individual, is it is certainly perfectly okay, because the two of you are in a relationship. If you want to renegotiate the contract, that's certainly your business.
Oh, yeah. Renewal of vows.
Exactly.
A lot of people,
if you want to change any lines in the contract,
upgrade.
There's nothing wrong with
that. No, and actually, there's not only nothing wrong, but one of the things we generally promise each other, if we've married, we've intended to grow old together.
Sure.
And what is growing? It's changing.
Yeah.
And one of the things I see couples a lot forget, especially 7 to 10 years in, is that part of what we've promised is to grow.
Right.
And the thing we never know when we're standing at the altar in the moment of the promise is what those growing and changing things are going to look and feel like. We promise, and then when we get there, it's like, ouch.
Yeah.
this is scary and painful. And so finding ways to remind each other that, hey, I promised I would help you with this. I promised to be by your side for these things. And it's harder than I thought it was going to be. And it's harder in ways I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
And please, and thank you for having patience with me while I figure out how to be a better partner.
Yeah, exactly.
Period. Yeah.
And I have to say that, you know, I've known couples, I've known people, and sometimes they weren't even couples, they were just friends, where one friend is going through something, and the other friend, for whatever their issues are, they bolt. They run.
Right.
They run away.
Right.
They cannot deal with what that friend, and it can be just a friend, is going through.
Well, and time out on that one, because that's huge. The reality is, every one of us does that.
Yeah.
Routinely.
Yeah.
We may not perceive us to be bailing, but the other person is experiencing us as bailing out.
Right.
And so that's where, as a Gemini, you know, Gemini loves communication. And I think it's really, really important that we find peaceful, nonviolent, authentic, constructive ways to talk about those moments. If we can't talk about those moments, we'll never get past the abandonment.
Yeah.
You know, and there'll always be some sort of resentment. It's really about discussion, compromise, negotiation, and coming back to the love place. with couples or friends or whatever. It's so easy to get our feathers ruffled when we're the ones that feel bailed out on.
Yeah.
However, you know, for every one incident I'm experiencing, I got 10 people who feeling that way about me. And
yeah.
So it's so hard to be humble. So hard to be humble.
And there's another aspect of it as well, and that is that, you know, there may come a point in your relationship where your partner's going through something,
heavy
whatever it
duty,
is, heavy duty stuff.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I won't even go into the laundry list of what it might be, but whatever it is, and it's not that you want to run away forever. It's like, you know, I need a break. I understand that you're going through this, and I do want to be there for you, but I am just really, I'm at my end.
I'm out of my comfort. Well, and this is what I see a lot. And Jamie and I talk about this weekly in working with people and what we see in the world. A lot of times, and there was just something on CNN about this. I wish I could remember the study, but there's actually been some research on this now. Most people turn to their friends and partners and spouses and family members a little too much with some of that deeper stuff. You know, when they're not reaching out to the right professional, or they're not reaching out to the right person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, don't go to your bookkeeper for legal advice, and vice versa. It's like, when you need legal advice, go to your lawyer. When you're having deep emotional stuff, you need somebody who works with deep emotional stuff to help you through it.
Right.
And your partner's job is to hold your hand and tell you that you're beautiful and tell you that they love you while you figure it out with the expert.
Right.
It's not your partner's job to fix it
or
to find the way to fix it. It may be the partner's job to drive you to the triage site, you know?
Right, exactly.
Put you in the car, buckle you in, and take you there. We've all done that. We've all been there.
Exactly.
But it's like, it's not, I think a lot of times we put too much on the wrong people, and we have to take responsibility for that.
Yeah.
You know, we put too much on the wrong person, and then we get mad at the other person for bailing out on us and abandoning us and caving under the pressure. When it's like, you know, honey, I love you. You are my one and only. The sun rises and sets for me with you, but I am not your therapist, and I don't know that. You know, here's what I think, but let's get you to someone who can help you.
You know, that is a very good point. Get the help from the person who
can
provide it to you. I mean, granted, if your partner's a therapist.
No.
Not
even
in that
case. At home.
Okay.
We don't do this at home.
This is not something
that
you do
with your partner.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't try this at home. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, there's a reason why they don't let doctors operate on their own families.
Right.
And it's the same thing with therapists. And even caregivers often don't caregive their own family because there's too much stuff.
There's too much stuff.
Okay.
And it changes the role. It makes it too fraught.
That makes sense.
It too complicated. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's an extraordinary lesson in going to get the help and the support that you need to help your relationship at whatever level it is. If you're really committed and care about your partner, then you don't go to your partner for therapy.
Right.
You know?
No, not at all. Especially when there's so many awesome resources in a town like this.
Yeah.
It runs the gamut from, you know, Reiki to the marriage encounters, you know, or Byron Katie's work, or I see all kinds of things with clients in a town like this, in a state like California, you know, there is no end of places you can go.
Your primary focus, if you will, in your work is dealing with couples and relationships in that respect? Or does it seem that it's kind of gone that way? You necessarily didn't plan it, but
most of my work is with individuals trying to have life and work balance. I do a lot of work with families. Let's say, you know, someone comes in. I'm working with this great guy now in Seattle who's an executive at a big tech company, and he's 50 something. He's got kids in college. He's been married to the same woman for 30 years. They're, you know, he's wanting to get ahead at work. But as we're digging through things, we're finding that he's got similar things going on at home as he does at work.
Okay.
Similar frustrations, similar dynamics, yada, yada, yada. Mm. And so one of the things that happens is people usually show up for either work problem or realizing that they're having the same level of frustration in a lot of places. And then depending on the individual and the family members involved, you know, we will, you know. The tricky part is, for me, I do a lot of work. My primary client base is higher educated working women, and a lot of them are coming in. A part of the work-life balance thing is like, oh, I just met this guy. Is he husband material? Or I'm about to get married. Help me pick a date. Mm-hmm. Or I've been married for 3 or 4 years, and I'm in that clinical zone that they talk about, where it's like I'm realizing that I was projecting, that there are ways in which he's not who I thought he was, and mm-hmm. I'm not who I thought I was, and how do I maintain this marriage and honor those things,
right,
and deal with those things.
Right. I want to shift gears just a little bit. In the work that both of you do, and I'm sure, because I know you, Beth, I'm not as familiar with you, Jamie, but I still want your input. Choosing the correct words and verbiage with a client?
Oh, with anybody.
With anybody.
Just with anybody.
Is really important. As a matter of fact, in my conversations with the gentleman who is going to be on this program sometime in the near future, he shares with me, he says, I never use the term that's right in terms of you're right about whatever you're talking about, or yes, that's the right way to. He uses the word correct. He says, you're correct. Now, if you're driving in a car and you're giving
right.
someone directions, you better use the word correct.
Correct.
If they ask you, do I turn right here? Correct. You know, but the language, the words, every word has power in it.
Oh yeah.
And you've got to make sure that you're using the proper terminology and verbiage that not only they understand, but that gets your point across.
And it's unique to every couple.
Yeah.
It's unique to every individual, and it's unique to every couple. And I think some signs are easier to communicate. Well, I started to say some signs communicate more easily, but then it's also, you know, about a whole bunch more than that. You were going to speak, Jamie.
No, I kind of lost my train of thought there. And sometimes when I'm doing a chart, Beth does a lot of talking with people. I do a lot of writing because mm-hmm. I'm not a good spontaneous talker.
Okay.
And so I need time to think and consider what I'm going to put down. And then I usually, once it's down, I don't change it, but I really need time in between. Well, Beth is just a natural. And it's one of the reasons that I like working with her so much mm-hmm. is that this book is really her. The drawings are based on astrological principles, but everything else in the book is based on good, strong astrological principles.
Okay.
And her grasp of astrology is really very fine. And her use of words has always appealed to me. She usually knows the right word for the situation. So in that respect, it's off of what you were talking about mainly, but that's how we came to write these books, mm-hmm. is that she has a good command of the language, and she combines that with her use of astrology and comes up as a really good astrological writer.
Sweetie.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm sorry. I got off
the
track.
No, that's, well, it's not off track as far as what we were talking about. I think that it's, again, I remember in my early radio days hearing that phrase, especially when it came to, like in the book of Genesis, in the beginning was the Word and the Word was God and so forth
right.
and so on, and that it was the Word and that it had power and that the language, the words that were chosen, and I got to thinking about that in terms of the translations of the Bible, thinking, well, wait a minute, the original language was Hebrew, and we're reading it in English, and what I understand of Hebrew is, and I've shared this before, is that it has so many nuances that are completely obliterated when it's translated into another language. So it's like, man, I wish they taught me Hebrew as a kid growing up, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, that's true, because the one thing that really sticks in my mind is that the idea that The love of money is the root of all evil. No, money is the root of all evil. But it was actually translated, should have been translated as the love of money is the root of all evil, not money itself. There's such a difference in the concepts.
And not only in terms of what I like to call the legend of each of the characters in the Hebrew alphabet, but then when you put them into words, but then and this gentleman that I was sharing this information about, you know, saying the word correct instead of right, he's a rabbi, sharing with me how extensive the study is to become a rabbi. Yeah. And then we got into a conversation about some passages in Leviticus that have been completely misunderstood. Uh-huh. And I'll share that with you off air, but I think that that's something that we, especially in this culture, in this society here in the United States, we are not aware of that because everything has been translated from the other old languages into ours. And so we're missing a lot of the nuance.
Of older texts.
Of older texts and the understanding. I mean, I forget what the name of this is, but I see letters and numbers in color, in different colors. Well, that's the nuance for me, but it's in English, okay?
Right.
Well, these other languages have the same kinds of nuances, tones, and numerical ratings for letters and alpha ratings for letters, numbers, and so on and so forth. And it's just a shame that how do we draw that out?
It's just amazing. And we are faced, I think, as couples in this modern world and individuals even, with several aspects of communication that are very difficult. One of them is really knowing what some of these ancient texts really said, you know, and different people will interpret things differently. But also in our day-to-day, think about what we're barraged by. Most of us on Facebook and Twitter and even the news, you know, we're not taught depth communication. You know, we throw an awful lot of stuff around really loosely. And when you watch politicians communicate on television trying to solve our problems, it's like, it's no wonder. They don't ever respond to each other. It's just dueling pontifications.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do that as people with each other, you know. And it's very difficult, again, to breathe and be present in the moment. And if something does get lost in translation or if we don't understand, you know, I don't think we ask enough questions of each other. Hey, tell me more about that. What did you mean by that? Yeah. When you chose that specific word, you know, I that sends off bells and whistles for me. But what does it mean to you? Because it may mean something different to us both. And that might explain some of the difficulty we're having.
It even brings up a conversation that I had with my father about 6 months ago. And my mindset, and I think this is maybe what protected me from what happened afterwards, but my mindset was, I am here with a group of people, it was my mother, my father, and my wife, and I am just putting ideas on the table. That was my mindset. I'm just sharing my ideas, my concepts, thinking that the other people at the table were interested. And my... Okay.
Yeah, right, exactly. I make that mistake all the time.
Never assume.
Yeah, that's true.
My darling beloved frequently says to me, encourages me to begin certain conversations like that with, is now a good time? Are you interested?
Yes, exactly.
Are you remotely interested?
I think I need to do the same.
Yeah, it's handy. It is very handy.
But
it is very handy.
The reaction that I got from my father was of a father criticizing his son's perspective on things. Now, I was aware of where he was coming from, but I didn't shift into the corrected child. I stayed in the
adult mode.
The adult mode. Yeah. I'm just sharing ideas here, and I moved on to the next topic, and I got exactly the same reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, it upset the women at the table, and so on and so forth. But it's like, maybe I should have prefaced the whole thing with, I'd like to share some of my ideas with you, just things that I've been musing about, kind of thing.
Right.
Instead of just throwing them out there, because, and I think that goes to what you're talking about. We, you know, because I really felt comfortable doing that.
I did.
They're my parents. They should be open to
child's
expressions.
Oh, no, baby. That doesn't mean squat. It also, the thing that brought that story reminded me of is we have to be so mindful of dynamics.
Yeah.
And how other people are. If we know some people are inflammatory and we unrealistically expect them to not be, you know, that's my bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's my bad. And it reminded me of a favorite, my absolute favorite aunt and uncle had this dynamic that I really didn't notice until I was in my 20s and we would go to visit and they were constantly calling each other names and putting each other down and I don't know why I woke up one Christmas to that, but they had such a combative style and it made me uncomfortable to be around.
Yeah.
But that was what they did and they were fine with it.
Yeah.
They were fine with it. And I mean, it took me about 3 years to like get over it. It's like they've always done that. They'll always do that. Yeah. That's how they show each other love. They're like the Bickersons.
Yeah.
You know, and it was my problem.
Right.
I didn't
because there was no reflection on you.
No,
you
and they weren't criticizing me.
Exactly.
It was just like, oh my gosh, if my husband said that to me, I would have been so gone. You know, just so gone. And that was just they just gave it and took it and it was. But we have to be in absolute loving allowance of reality.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be. And family dynamics, like the mistake we make is assuming that our best beloveds are absolutely hanging on our every word and interested in every thought, every feeling.
Yeah.
And when, you know, what we, in this modern world, what we now know is, you know, what's the mantra they say at Thanksgiving? It's like, don't bring up religion or politics.
Right.
You know, and
right.
don't really talk about you unless they ask.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Give compliments, give praise, you know, ask them questions, but don't expect anybody to care.
Right.
You know, because they're your family and we're all, we all get self-absorbed and get, you know, caught up in our own stuff, especially on a big family holiday meal, you know.
Like this one.
Yeah. Don't expect, give without any expectation of receiving.
Yeah.
And give authentically. And if there's been hard luck, if there's been hard feelings in prior Valentine's days, I really recommend negotiating as much as possible ahead of time.
Yeah.
My husband and I don't go out on Valentine's Day because we tend to get, in a small town like this, you will get better service, you will get better food, and you won't wait as long if you go out another night.
Right.
And so, you know, a good easy trick with that is to go the Tuesday before or the Tuesday after.
Right.
You know?
I was just thinking that, you know, Valentine's Day is named after St. Valentine, and that it might be a very good idea for everybody to Google St. Valentine and Valentine's Day to get a sense of why this started.
Yeah.
And I only bring this up because Mother's Day was started as a peace movement.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has kind of degenerated, not that's the wrong word, but it's come down to something else.
Right.
But I have a feeling that this holiday has really significant meaning. And what Beth had said about these being our ceremonies and ritual days.
Mm-hmm. Now.
Now has a lot of, I think you could bring back some of that by knowing how this holiday actually started.
Getting back to the roots of it.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I feel silly that I didn't think to do that beforehand so I could speak more intelligently to that, but I don't know.
Well,
I honestly don't know.
I forgot about it, too, because I love why these holidays start.
Yeah.
They always have a good reason behind them.
Right.
There's a ritual or a ceremony of some sort that's tied to them in the very beginning, early on.
Yes.
Or an intention that's may seem somewhat insignificant to us today, but was very significant back then, to the extent that, well, guess what? It's carried through to today, even though it doesn't take on the form that it did from the beginning, but we still celebrate it.
Yeah.
You know, so there's got to be some significance. So, yeah, going back to the roots, I think it's very important.
Yes.
Before we wrap up the program, I want to remind our listeners that you can get a copy of the book, which is now an ebook. And again, it is entitled The Very Generic and Experiential Zodiac-Based Guide to Valentine's Day Bliss. And it's available through BethMcDonaldConsulting.com as well as Amazon.com. It is available in booklet form, or you can get it in e-form. Yes, and she's flashing that at me right now. As our resident photographer clicks away pictures. And I want to thank both of you for coming in. I do have a couple of questions. I don't think I've ever asked you these questions, Beth. I know you've heard me ask them of our other guests, I think. And Jamie, I know you haven't. I've never asked these because you've never been on the program before. And again, I thank you for being here with us, by the way. It's great to have both of you in studio and talking about this. Who is Beth McDonald?
As a
she
Gemini?
She cringes.
As a Gemini, I can honestly say I don't know.
Okay.
We're always trying to figure out who we're going to be when we grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jamie, same question, only who is Jamie O'Toole?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would sound a little, pretentious if I actually said what I think I am. But I do have a very strong desire to be a spiritually oriented person that is not a martyr, but I believe in service to the community. Mm-hmm. Only sometimes I get tired of it, and I just want to be in service to myself.
That's sometimes we have to.
And that's a lot of Sagittarius stuff right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd like to, when I die, I would like to be, whatever day it is, the best person I can be.
Okay.
But I fall short of that pretty easily.
And what do you hope to achieve through the work that you're doing? Both the artwork as well as your astrological work.
Well, the artwork is something especially for me. I hope that it will carry me into my old age because it works more beautifully than almost anything I've ever used as a meditation. You can lose yourself in everybody who does art on whatever level.
Yeah.
You lose yourself in it. For whatever amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It can be frustrating and it can be upsetting and it can be beautiful. But Picasso said, close your eyes and sing. And I think that that's part of the artwork. The astrological work, I just love it. I love astrology. I loved it from the minute I first read about it.
Mm.
And I like sharing the idea of it because I believe in reincarnation, and so I believe that the more you can learn about yourself in a particular life, the better you can come back to fulfill whatever destinies you haven't
mm-hmm.
worked on in the life before, the 50
right.
lifetimes back.
Right. How would people get a hold of you? Email?
Yes, they could get a hold of me as long as they're nice emails.
Remember that, folks.
We're
nice
discerning.
Emails.
It's discernment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what is the email address?
JOT1127@gmail.com.
JOT1127@gmail.com. Okay. And Beth, what do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Sometimes I feel like I want to leave a lasting legacy that will help people after I'm gone. And then sometimes it's really more about the moment. Sometimes it's really more about the moment. It's, to me, what I'm always first and foremost trying to achieve is to stay in integrity with the reasons I decided to show up here. I believe for most people, it's really about using whatever your gifts and talents are to move forward on whatever your soul needs to evolve to and to help those along the road do the same. And most days, it's just as simple as that. I don't get any more complicated than that. Some days I do. But most days it's like, help me to just do whatever it was I said I was going to do so that I can move on and do something better. Yeah.
Keep things flowing.
Soul's evolution thing.
And finally, how powerful are we? This is to both of you.
She's actually laughing. She's actually smiling about this. You look quite amused.
No, I'm not amused. I'm bemused.
Bemused.
Oh.
Because I believe, for example, Christ said to his disciples, you can be as I am, only more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow, Really? How?
That's a lot. Yeah, how? Yeah.
And Buddha has a lot of the same idea. You know, you can be a Buddha. You can. I was talking to Wang Po, who runs the Mahakankala Center, and I said something about all the sad people that are out there. What can I do? Because I can't take them home. I can't do this. He said, be the Buddha for them. And I thought, oh, that sounds lovely. I'd like to be the Buddha. Mm-hmm. But it's a process that I haven't really mastered yet.
Your perspective, Beth?
I think the concept of power is a very interesting thing. I think the more spiritual your orientation, the more powerful you truly are. I think there are those who, quote unquote, worship false gods around power. I think people get confused about what power is. Mm-hmm. And regardless, it makes me think of that Bible quote that the Obamas are always tossing out about, to whom much is given, much is expected. Mm-hmm. The more power you have, I think the more of a moral obligation you have to give, to share, yeah, and to pass those blessings on to others, let them flow through you like water rather than trying to hold
on
and
yeah,
hoard.
I think that's what's happening around the world right now with some of our respective leaders and positions of authority in different countries. That's what they're trying to do, is hold on instead
well,
of letting it flow.
Think about it. I talk with people about this quite frequently, parents with parenting. One of the hardest things to teach a child is the concept of sharing.
Yeah.
You look at their little faces and they just go horrific. It's like, you know, and the only thing that you can, you know, they worked hard for that toy. They don't want to give it to their brother. You yeah know, they don't want to give it to their sister. They've got it, man, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the only way you can teach a child to share is to remind them what it's like to have not.
Hmm.
And I think a lot of people now are being reminded how unsustainable greed is, how unsustainable hoarding resources is. It's an untenable, unsustainable position.
I came across a new concept of hoarding, I should say.
Yeah.
I had never thought of it before until it was brought to my attention. People hoard all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
But then I got to thinking, well, what about the one percenters? Why wouldn't they be considered hoarders?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Bear in mind, I am not advocating that they disperse it and share it with the world, and that's their business. I'm just looking at it from an observational standpoint. You know, you can fill your home with all kinds of stuff, or you can fill your bank account with all kinds of numbers. And
that's a subject for another show.
Program, sure.
But definitely through certain lenses,
yeah,
there are those who absolutely do
yeah
consider that. And I think that's part of the issue. A lot yeah of that is being examined. A lot of that is being challenged now. And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. Yeah. It's uncomfortable. We as a people are having to decide who we want to be.
Yeah.
Are we a group of people that loves and shares? Well, you know, it keeps coming back to love.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it keeps coming back to love for me.
And with that, we'll kind of end on that particular point. But it was just something that kind of came up as in our conversation here. And I just it's just very interesting, some of the concepts that do manage to surface in these programs. As I've said before, I don't ask the questions. The universe does. I'm just along for the ride. So, and you have something that you wanted to share?
Well, it's just one thing. After 9/11, there was a Canadian. I forget who he is. I think he's a journalist. He wrote a letter to the American people saying, and about the American people, that they tend to be the most generous people on the face of the planet, mm-hmm, and went on to enumerate the things that Americans do. I think it's very interesting that on one hand, we do have a lot of people who are very wealthy and maybe hold on too tight to what they have, but there's a whole country out there that shares
mm-hmm
for mm-hmm SPCA, for animal rights, for
right
hungry children.
All over the world,
exactly. Americans still have the concept of, we have a lot, we can give you something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
We have room here for
we
you.
We have room here for you, even though things are tighter with 7 billion people on the planet than when I first came along, when there were 2.5 billion people. It's really been a big increase.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the idea most Americans I know, most people I know, not just Americans, but people who live in this country, have the desire to help. And all you have to do is walk out on the streets of Santa Barbara and see that there are people who actually you can help.
Yeah, absolutely. Beth McDonald and Jamie O'Toole, authors of their, I don't want to say their new work, but newly released in e-form, e-book, the very generic and experiential Zodiac-based guide to Valentine's Day bliss. I want to thank both of you for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Richard.
And for whatever team you're voting, rooting for, go.
Rock right on.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Sunday, believe it or not, next Sunday at 3 p.m. at this time, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Law.